The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Mr. Bob Dio, Bob Engineering and Producing on the other side of the glass, together. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show, Wednesday, July 17th, 2019, listening to Tucson's Voice for Trusted Local News Talk, 10:30. And Bob Dio does such a great job with us, and it's good to see you again, Bob. And Bob will be glad to take your calls at 790-2040. He will be the first person on the other end of the line. When he pick up the phone there, he will say, "Welcome to the Buckmaster Show." Had a little fun today on Facebook, on the Bill Buckmaster Facebook page. You know, so many of the young people are posting these, what you'll look like when you grow old. You know, like folks in their 20s. Well, this is how you'll look when you're, I don't know, I guess my age. But I said, why in the world? You won't find any of the baby boomers doing this, because all they have to do is look in the mirror. So have some fun. Go to Bill Buckmaster on the Facebook page. Paul Cunningham is here. Paul, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat representing Ward Number 2. Paul's been on the council now for 8 years, is it? No. Did I get that right? 8 years?
Nine years.
And standing for re-election in the upcoming city election. He does not have a primary opponent. He will have a opponent in the general election. Paul, how is your summer going? Usually 10 months out of the year, we have to really do this interview, our monthly interview with you over telephonically, but of course you're off in the summer. How has your summer been going so far?
It's been a really interesting summer. This past school year, I decided to make the move of schools. I've worked on at Apollo in the Sunnyside School District. I've got some ties to that district from a professional standpoint when I was a juvenile probation officer. And so it was a really easy transition there. I loved it. I did 2 years of PE. I did, I believe, 5 years of social studies. And it was a really special experience. It was wonderful.
Do kids do PE anymore?
Still do it. Yep. Huh. There's a lot of, I mean, it's not the type of PE from the 50s and 60s where you climb the rope.
Yeah, we did that. We did that. We climbed the rope.
It's not the PE from the 80s when you do a sport every week.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fitness. There's a lot of aerobics. There's yoga. There's step counters.
Wow.
There's calorie burning and Fitbits. Mm. There's nutrition pieces. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit different type of PE, but there's still PE. And so it was a wonderful experience. The faculty at that school was unbelievable. It's one of the hardest socioeconomically challenged schools in the county. I think it really actually is in this number
Where
one
is
in
it?
The state.
Where is it?
Irvington and 12th Avenue.
Okay.
But it is a wonderful neighborhood and community. I was also the basketball coach and flag football coach. And it was awesome. It was wonderful. But what I found was that what was good when I first started was I didn't want to be in a situation early on as a teacher to say, oh, hey, I'm sorry that your kid isn't passing my class, but we'll get your roads paved really soon or something like that. And I just didn't want to be in that situation. I didn't think it could be proper.
Yeah.
But as I've learned the role of a teacher in both the community and at a school, and I've learned the role of a council person, I think you really can balance it. And so you're allowed to adapt. Mm-hmm. And I also saw the opportunity at Gridley Middle School, which is actually in Ward 2, right down the street from my office. And I thought that was a really good fit. Also, my principal has moved to another job, which is great for him. And so it was a timing issue where I could leave kind of gracefully without having to let down a principal, because I knew I would have been back. I really wanted to go back to Apollo. I loved it there. Mm-hmm. But I just thought this was a nice little opportunity to do that. So I'm moving districts too. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited. I love the opportunity, but that's just on the teaching side. On the city council side, this is the summers when I get most of my work done. I do a whole bunch of meetings in the summer. I go back to back to back to back just about every day. I'm in the office just about every day except for 5 or 6 days when I get out of town like everybody does during the summer. So this is when we get a lot of work done, and we've had some pretty neat events in Tucson this summer. Last summer, what I worked on the most was Jesse Owens Park, and we put $1.4 million in that park.
How is that park doing? Is it being utilized?
It is unbelievable. Every night when I go there about three nights a week, every night after sundown, and this is through, I haven't been over there in a couple weeks, so I want to make a disclaimer, but every night after sundown, that park was hopping, whether it was Little League, whether it was the basketball court, whether it was the football doing spring training. There's even a youth soccer league, and girls softball has got a lot of momentum. And
is there a pool there?
There's a pool. It reopened this summer for the first time in about 3 years. So that was last summer. This summer, we also worked on Palo Verde Park. Palo Verde Park has had almost the same treatment as Jesse Owens Park in some ways. We did not replace the entire irrigation system, but we redid the parking lot. We actually redid the pool there. We're working on the basketball court next. The fields are coming online. They're starting to get to the green and the grass quality that I want them to. And we painted it. We got a grant and painted a new mural painted by Palo Verde High School students, which was really exciting. And we built the first splash pad there.
Wow.
So we did all that this summer at Palo Verde Park. So that was kind of a lot. I feel like I've been at Palo Verde Park every week this summer. And that neighborhood right now is an example of when you put a little investment in, you organize the neighborhood a little bit, the neighborhood just transforms.
How would you characterize Ward 2? Is it a low-income ward?
No. It's not, but it's not wealthy either.
Okay.
It's middle-class folks. It's hard-working folks.
What are the boundaries?
You go north of 20. It's everything north of 22nd to basically the city limits, which is Tankerbirdie Road. There's a little north above Tankerbirdie Road or River Road, but some of it kind of weasels in and out.
So it's middle class?
Yep. And then there's the panhandle. Okay. I call it the panhandle. It's shaped kind of like Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. There's a little panhandle north of Grant to Craycroft. Finally, I have two dips that go into Golf Links area. One is Tierra del Sol, which is Cole Wilmot Golf Links 22nd, those boundaries. Tierra del Sol dips in, and then half of Rolling Hills dips in about a mile and a half down the road.
Are there emergency road issues in that ward?
Not right now.
Big potholes that really need to be addressed immediately.
In the neighborhoods, there always are.
Yes.
But we've had some good neighborhood response, and we've been able to address a lot of the roads that were residential that were failing have had some type of treatment. Also, every single corridor in the last 5 years in Ward 2 has had a treatment. So I don't have, except the stuff that's right now under construction, every major corridor, none of them are graded below failing or at failing it right now. Mm. None. Mm. And then at the residential roads, we've seen a nice, there's still, I haven't done a study in a while. It isn't the 60 or 70% it was before. It's probably, I'd like to believe we're under 50 at failing. Probably we are, but I don't have we have a truck that actually drives around, scans the road and grades it, whether it's performing, underperforming, and failing. And so I haven't had a report from that truck in a while. Once I get that, I'll probably have a better idea.
But those would be secondary roads, neighborhood roads that would be in that category.
Yeah, and that's part of the municipal improvement districts I put forth. I've said, hey, look, let's see if we can stretch the book a little more so that more of those roads are improved and engaged at a faster rate. I think we can do that. The neighborhoods in Ward 2 are the type of neighborhoods that would have might take advantage of that. A few of the neighborhoods would.
Paul Cunningham is with us, Tucson City Councilman in Ward number 2. And when we come back after the break, normally it's pretty slow for City Council, but just last week, tentative approval on finally a downtown convention hotel, this deal that would the council giving conditional approval to a first-of-its-kind agreement with the Pasquayaki tribe to build and operate a casino near West Grant Road and Interstate 10. Been a lot of stuff going on in the city of Tucson. We'll talk about it with Councilman Cunningham, but first we want to take our break here. Paul, it's time to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town.
Oh, you mean Mona's?
Yes, that's what I mean. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of
the world famous sweet treat sandwiches, quiches. And well, Danish Kringle.
There
you can't
you
forget
go.
The Danish Kringle, man.
You're right on with the Danish Kringle, because that's the signature. Everything is built around the Kringle at Mona's Danish Bakery. It starts with the Kringle, and now it's moved on to a hot breakfast. They're serving the hot breakfast 6:30 each morning. And why not stop by? If you're anywhere near, up in the foothills area, around Swan and Sunrise, are you hungry? You haven't had lunch? Why not stop by Mona's? Have a sandwich. The bread, my goodness, wide variety of breads to choose from. And for dessert, that's something to look forward to. May I make a suggestion? How about a brownie? Or my new favorite, owner and chief baker, Steve, doing the carrot cake. And it's not overwhelming. With some of the carrot cakes can be kind of that overwhelming taste of the carrots. This is a light carrot taste, and that nice butter icing, not real thick, just a nice thin layer there on the carrot cake. Mona's Danish Bakery.com, a link also to BuckmasterShow.com, where you'll find all of our great partners. Believe me, folks, these partners, some of them are legacy folks who've been with us since day one of the show in 2011. They really believe in what we do here each afternoon from noon to one, and I thank them all very much. I believe in all of my sponsors, and please support them. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman representing Ward Number 2, is with me in studio on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news talk here in Tucson. We're talking about this has been a very busy summer. I want to address a little bit about our homeless situation. How would you characterize it right now, Councilman?
In the summer, our homeless population actually contracts because it gets really hot.
Yeah, right.
And then it rains a lot, which is also not homeless friendly. So our actual street population contracts. We're probably one of the few cities where it contracts more in the summer than it does in the winter, which is an interesting phenomenon. The other thing that happens with us is we have an interesting phenomenon that we're a very caring city. So we have actually a considerable amount of bed spaces. We always have bed spaces. Every agency always has extra bed spaces. The problem is that they're not programmed for specifics. So, if you are a veteran and do not have a pet and do not have a companion, we can probably place you. We can probably place you 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, probably, unless you have been to every single placement we have available and have been banned from that placement. Okay, so those are the scenarios that happen.
Banned for substance abuse issues.
Violation of the rules. You're not allowed, or you're not even banned. You're just not permitted to return to that placement for 6 months or 9 months or a year. That type of stuff happens. If you are a woman with children, we can place you probably about 240 to 260 days a year. There are times in the year where that population expands to the point that we don't have enough bed spaces. It's not good. And so that worries me. If you have a pet and you do not want to get, you do not want to allow your pet to be adopted or go to animal care, it's much harder to place you. And so those are the challenges that we have. And quite frankly, just because you're homeless doesn't mean you're not allowed to have a pet. A lot of times that's part of your therapy. So there's all kinds of things. A lot of times when we have people that are homeless, there are so many different underlying things going on. Whether it's everybody likes to assume substance abuse, which, to be fair, that's a good assumption sometimes. But there are also just string of bad luck, mental health issues, just hard times. I spoke to a man earlier this week. Just some very significantly unique circumstances put him into his position. And we got him placed right away.
Did he approach you?
No, we approached him.
Okay.
I just didn't really.
Was he, did you see him on a street corner?
It was in my ward.
Okay.
It was in my ward. I had seen him a couple times. And I like to walk a different park every week. I'd seen him a couple times actually at different areas. And it was slow. The first one was, hey, how are you? A couple times until they're familiar, and then you're a little more comfortable to approach the guy and say, is there some, you know, have you been approached for an intake or anything like that? And if he isn't, then you can contact. In this specific situation, a couple agencies had already engaged him. So he was ready. But a lot of times if you're not ready and we force you to be placed, whether it's detoxing or being medicated or finding self-value or being fulfilled, you're not going to be successful at placement until some of those other issues are addressed.
Can you put these people to work?
We try. We have a program right now that Richard Fimbres worked on. It's from a New Mexico model. It's been going almost 2.5-3 years. And we have six to eight people every cycle. Or every day when one person graduates the program, they can work up to 4 weeks. They can earn a max amount of money. After a certain amount, they have to be 1099 by the city, or we could be potentially violating a labor agreement. So we don't want to do that. But this is for people to kind of get about in their fate. At one point, this program, I can't remember the numbers exactly, at one point the program had 60 or 70 people in a row get placed. And
what do they do?
They clean the side of the roads, help clear the park, clean up garbage in the park, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
What do you think of what's going on at the monastery?
I think that the community response is unbelievable. We've talked about it a couple times. I think it's pretty special that Tucson is able to rise to the occasion like this. Last week we were a little bit, we kind of hit a mini snag, but it was really an ego-driven snag, not a not a true problematic stay. It was an optic snag.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really, I don't think it was really that big a deal. And once everything was explained, everything
was fine. Yeah, it's going to be over at the juvenile center.
Look, I worked at that juvenile center for three years, well, 2 years in the pods and then 7 years as a probation officer. And I can tell you that there's no, it's a good facility for that many people.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, when you're talking about moving people through 3 days and doing a processing center, you got to have X number of bathrooms. You got to have X number of showers. You have to have X number. And so that's why that facility works. It actually probably works better than the monastery does.
Did this cost the city anything?
No.
It didn't.
Very little. I mean, if you want to count Steve Kozacik's time,
sure,
which I don't think you should have to. The guy's right. An amazing council person.
Mm-hmm.
We've helped in kind with some staff and some coordination, but really the lead agency has been Catholic Community Services. If you could put a dollar amount on it, I'd say it's in the 3 year period, it's under $100,000.
It's pretty amazing that 13,000, 14,000 people since January have come through that former Benedictine monastery. Our community really has opened our hearts. But there is a segment of the community, and I know you hear from these people, who say, why are we a dumping ground? Why Tucson? Why are these people here? What is your bottom line response you hear that?
Remember that they're only here for 2 or 3 days. And if we...
But you do hear it.
Well,
yeah.
I haven't heard it per se.
Okay.
Directly.
All right.
But I will say that nobody's directly said we need to let, you know, if we street release these folks, it's a bigger problem.
Sure.
So I think this has been a good community effort.
Mm-hmm. Matt has called us at 790-2040. Matt, would you like to speak with the councilman?
Yes. First of all, I think Councilman Cunningham and all of the council has done an absolutely wonderful job. This city is just moving in tremendously, the right direction. And we even got a shout out, believe it or not, on CNBC. Tucson was mentioned as one of the up and coming locations for tech, which is unbelievable that they gave us a shout out. Just wanted to mention one thing, Councilman Cunningham. I know you have been concerned in the past about, you know, making sure that Tucson is protected with regards to both water rates and electric rates, and what is occurring with regards to affordability. Recently, just very within the last couple of weeks, there was a ruling by the Arizona Corporations Commission that basically stuck AHO with a tremendous rate increase, something that they basically are going to be unable to afford. It's probably originally was requested up to 400%, but what they finally did was over 200% increase. And again, I just bring that to your attention because I know that it's a community in Southern Arizona. It's in Sharon Bronson's district, and there's just been little attention given to those 3,500 residents. I just hope the city is cognizant of that as well. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Thank you, Matt.
Matt, thanks for the heads up, and we were following that pretty closely. The big thing about the Arizona Corporation Commission, and the hardest thing, probably the more challenging thing we have, is that because the CorpCom is all statewide, there's really no Tucson representation on it. And you know, I used to be really critical of TEP on certain things, but I will say this for TEP. Man, it could be worse. There are some other utilities out there that have done a number on the cities that represent them and everything else. So I'm really cognizant of that, and I got to give my as much as it's as hard as it is for me because I clash with TEP from time to time, but I got to give credit where credit is due, and that TEP has been a little bit more transparent, especially lately, in responding to some of my concerns and the community's concerns.
All right, next big issue. I've got about 30 seconds. What will it be? What are we going to be talking about in the news media next from the city?
Well, I think there's a couple things coming up. One will be the as the process moves forward with Tone Odom. I think another thing will be downtown, and I think I think these scooters are going to be some interesting.
You mean Pasquayaki, not
excuse
the,
me, yeah. excuse me, absolutely Pasquayaki. I think that project's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. I think some of the downtown stuff is kind of the capstones are coming for downtown, and this downtown revitalization it's going to kind of cycle out. But the one thing that I think is kind of the red herring that's nobody's seeing, but I bet it's coming up. It's going to be interesting when the kids come back what these scooters are like.
Oh, the scooters, yeah. I hadn't thought of that. That's why I asked you, what's next? Scooter issue. All right, Paul Cunningham. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
This is our big week over at one of our great sponsors over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Paul, have you been over to that beautiful area, the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment? Have you taken your family over there?
Yeah, Silver City should probably be a sister city for Tucson.
It should.
It's such an amazing place. And
is there something that could be done to start that?
Absolutely. I think we should definitely go for it. They'd be great partners on a number of projects.
And, yeah. Because a lot of Silver Cityans come over here to Tucson, do shopping, and
they like it here.
And yeah, and we have a lot of Tucsonans that go over there to recreate, and that's what we tell people about. And like this week is the big Silver City Clay Festival, everything to do with pottery. So we will see if Councilman Cunningham can perhaps start the ball rolling with a sister city project between the old Pueblo, Tucson, and Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of great places to stay. So many recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show, talking with Tucson's number one wildlife control company. The people from Animal Experts are in the house. They'll be next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Animal Experts Incorporated was established in 1991 by Mark Hammond and Jeff Carver. They've been working with wildlife and domestic animals for over 40 years. Their company offers a unique service that humanely captures and removes wildlife, and this includes pretty much all wildlife: mice, bats, rats, squirrels, pigeons, javelina, raccoons, skunks, bobcats, and on it goes. Mark and Jeff had the opportunity to educate millions of viewers by being featured on 9 episodes of National Geographic's Animal Extractors. Several years later, they were featured on 8 episodes of National Geo Wild's When Nature Calls. They've been featured on 3 separate wildlife documentaries on wolves, badgers, and how roadrunners eat rattlesnakes. Jeff and Mark, good to see you, gentlemen.
Good
you
to be too, here. Bill.
Do roadrunners typically eat rattlesnakes?
They do, and I was thoroughly amazed when I did a documentary with National Geographic. It was in conjunction with the Desert Museum here. They had a roadrunner that was hatched in captivity. They knew every minute of this roadrunner's life. And we set up a scenario. I had the rattlesnake on the ground with a piece of plexiglass in front of it because we weren't trying to feed the roadrunner. And the roadrunner came around the corner. It saw the rattlesnake and immediately went into the dance that they do where they're flapping their wings. And he wanted to kill that rattlesnake.
Wow.
And we know for a fact it had never seen one in its life.
So some kind of genetic deal there.
It's embedded in them instinctually.
How do they fare when against the rattlesnake?
Oh, they're one of the top predators for a rattlesnake. Yeah, they're really quick. They grab them and grab them by the head and slam them on the ground.
Mark, how about javelinas? Those of us, we live in the central foothills. We have the packs that come through. And the packs, Mark and Jeff, as you know, can pretty much range from a couple of javelinas to 10, maybe a dozen or so. They are pack animals, aren't they, Mark?
Exactly, yeah.
And what should our response be to the packs?
You know, I think Jeff will agree with me that the majority of the calls that we usually get is when somebody's walking their dog. And usually what happens is if their dog barks at the herd, the javelinas perceive the dog as like a coyote. They're in that canid family, which is where we get that word canine: foxes, wolves, coyotes, and dogs. So they perceive that. Red flag goes up because the javelinas perceive that this dog is going to break up the herd and is going to go after the juvenile or baby javelinas. That's what they eat. So they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to run, fight or flight. You know, that's their fear base. So if they do attack, many times people, they'll pick up their dog and they're unintentionally bitten by a javelina. Mm-hmm. We're usually the first ones to get the call. And this happens over and over again. So we try to teach communities, HOAs, and things like this, being on the radio, to tell people what to do when they see a herd of javelinas. So if you're walking your dog and you see a herd, we tell them, turn around, do a 180 and walk back. You know, that's
pick up the dog if possible.
Right.
In your arms. Right.
Right. And walk the other way.
Jeff?
Yeah, just back away from the situation. There's, pick a different route. There's nothing so important that you're going to sacrifice bodily harm or possibly the death of your animal because the javelina's got just a real nasty bite. You know, they've got huge teeth. And it's a defensive posture. It's not like they're being quote-unquote mean. It's they're defending themselves and their herd. That's what they do.
They can't differentiate between a dog and a coyote then, basically.
Well, in their eyes, it's all the same thing. I mean, in their eyes, they've got very poor vision anyway. So just having that whole canine thing going on.
Are they working by smell? Is that their big thing?
Primarily, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of our Facebook friends asked me to ask you gentlemen, the friend has a very pregnant as he put it, very pregnant bobcat that has taken up residence in his backyard. What would you suggest, Jeff and Mark? Just kind of leave the animal alone?
How many calls a day do we get, Jeff? We probably get 2-3 bobcat calls a day at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, after fall comes around, maybe one or two a month. But the thing is, I like the quote that Jeff gave 10 years ago. And so what we do is we screen the calls. We'll ask them, you know, do you have dogs? No, don't have any dogs. Do you have kids? No kids. Grandkids? Yes, but they're in Wisconsin. Jeff tells them, okay, this is what you do. The people are like, okay, what do we do?
Yeah.
They'll say, go get your camera and enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dealing with a school district right now where there's bobcats on the school. My only concern right now is if they get into the buses, wake them up or something, because they have to keep the buses open when they're not used, the doors for security and insurance reasons to that. But typically, you're going to have to corner a bobcat inside a room before you're going to get injured.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that we're concerned about more than anything is kittens right now,
mm-hmm.
because they are going to be protective of their kittens. And bobcats don't think it's nothing to them, at least in the Sonoran Desert, to bear their young in somebody's backyard. Anywhere else in the country except for province in Canada, mm-hmm. bobcats don't want to be anywhere near you. But here in Tucson, they're always in your backyard. They're always on your diving board or on your back wall. So
I'll tell people, normally, you know, if you don't have small pets or kids,
right,
and you know, you're an adult there, you can enjoy them in your backyard. It's not in and of itself a problem. If she hasn't had the kittens yet, you know, and you want to go out there and just bang some pots and pans together and yell, make your presence known, she'll probably leave. I mean, mm-hmm. if I come over to your house and you do that to me, I'm going to leave too. You
now, know? How long would she typically be with the kittens in that particular location after she bears her young? Are they pretty mobile pretty soon after birth or no?
Within, 2 months, then yeah. she's starting to take them out and basically yeah. teach them how to be bobcats. They're okay. not going to travel far because they're mm-hmm. still, you know what it's like traveling with little kids.
Yeah.
But it's one of these things where she's going to teach them how to hunt, and that's the scenario where it could come into play if you've got outdoor animals, you know, pets that you, even ones that you just turn out to go potty at night. If it's a small dog or a cat or something like that that you think is safe in your backyard, it might not be.
We're speaking with Mark Hammond and Jeff Carver. They are the owner and operators of Animal Experts, Inc., and it's very easy if folks want to get a hold of you guys. You're on the Facebook, and, of course, you're on the Internet, and just Google, I guess, Animal Experts Tucson. It would come up.
Our office number is 531-1020. And you call that number and you reach one of us.
You know, I saw some wonderful video that was posted on my Facebook page of two, and perhaps you gentlemen saw this. This happened in Tucson in the Catalina foothills. Two bighorn sheep who came down into the backyard, and the sheep were drinking out of the backyard pool. Did you by chance see that video? You did not.
I specifically didn't, but people send me that all the time.
But wouldn't that be highly unusual?
There's an area, I'm sure you're familiar with an area, Pima Canyon.
Right.
And a lot of residents who are customers, they'll see bighorn sheep. Right in that area, there's a face on the Catalina Mountains where pretty much the only thing you're going to see on there is sheep. Because mm-hmm. other animals, they it's hard for them to climb, you know, vertically, I would say.
But yeah, I've got customers that are always pulling out their phone, showing me the pictures, and one not too long ago had one of the bighorn actually looking in the window of their front room.
Oh my goodness!
It was a beautiful picture. But yeah, if we have water features in our yard, then you know we all know in the Sonoran Desert water is in short supply. So, yeah, they'll come down and take advantage of that kind of thing.
We've talked with you gentlemen before about rattlesnakes and hopefully folks can take that. If they have dogs, they can take the class at the Humane Society. That you gentlemen work with the Humane Society to kind of program the dog, right? So the dog is not going to go near the rattlesnake. And you've said in the past that it's 95% effective, pretty much?
Yeah, it's if you go through the class with us, right, and you have any doubts after that, we'll test the dog for free. Mm-hmm. And if it requires to be retrained at that point where it didn't take for whatever reason, some dogs, you know, we're all different. We all learn differently. Dogs are the same way. If you've got a dog that's got a high prey drive, typically nothing against Jack Russells, but Jack Russells have a really high prey drive, and lots of times it may take us another session on that. But yeah, it's really effective.
All right, Mark and Jeff, always a pleasure. And again, the company is Animal Experts Incorporated. They are on Facebook. They're on the internet, of course. And again, your phone number, Jeff?
531-1020.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
Buckmaster Show on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back as we mark Apollo 11, 50 years later, yesterday being the 50-year anniversary of the launch of Apollo 11. Mark Sykes is in the house. We'll talk with Mark, reminisce with him a little bit, and perhaps if you'd like to call us, share with us where you were 50 years ago when the moon launch happened, 790-2040. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, their 13-acre site, now home to Zocalo. All that great furniture, much of it handmade, beautiful things from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. The website, greenthingsaz.com. Buckmaster.com. Let's welcome now Mark Sykes to the Buckmaster Show. We usually bring in Dr. Sykes once a month, but this time I made an exception, wanted to bring him in because this, of course, is the 50th anniversary, yesterday being the 50th anniversary of the launch of Apollo 11. Dr. Sykes, CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute for more than 40 years. This Tucson-based nonprofit has been engaged in the exploration of the solar system. You know, nobody knew, Mark, how to get to the moon when President JFK issued that challenge May 25th, 1961. You know, people might have been just saying, well, oh, that's great. That's going to take decades.
Well, actually, people didn't know enough to know that it wasn't going to take a long time. Yeah. And it was a remarkable accomplishment that we basically started from scratch and had to invent a whole variety of technologies in order to make it happen.
I didn't realize that there were so many people that actually that worked on the whole Apollo program. There were, I think, several hundred thousand people that were involved.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Of course, I wasn't one of them because I was just 13 when they landed.
Right.
So,
but what kind of an impression did that make on you at 13? And then, you know, look where you are right now and getting and devoting your life to space, basically.
Well, it was huge, of course. But I was originally inspired by watching Alan Shepard go up, you know, on the first Mercury, first American in space. And that kind of pushed me, you know, in this direction. And of course, things were going so rapidly. I remember being in junior high school during the Gemini program, which was precursor to Apollo, when they're learning to rendezvous and link up, things that they would need to do in order to get to the moon. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, by the time I'm an adult and grown up, it's all going to be over. We'll be colonizing the moon, colonizing Mars. It's going to be a done deal. So,
yeah, when you think, where would we be if we'd kept at that particular pace?
Yeah, I've said in the past, I think that if in 1969 you'd asked me, where do you think we'll be in the year 2000? So we went from nothing to the moon in 8 years. Will we be doing another 30 at that kind of pace? I would have said we'd be on to the stars.
Yeah, but it didn't turn out that way. 790-2040, like to hear from folks. Where were you 50 years ago when Neil Armstrong took that famous first step? Sotheby's is the auction house. Perhaps you saw this, Mark. They claim the original video or the original film of the moon, first moon step and the first mission. And somehow that an employee there at the Space Center bought it for $761 in like the 1980s. Yeah. And now it's being put up at auction, $1 million. For this whole package. Amazing. But I guess you can't say it was the original because there were all sorts of duplicates that were being made simultaneously at that time. But still, $1 million.
Of course, at the time, I was glued to the TV set. Right. I was glued to the radio. And I was recording everything that I heard. And so I've got about 40 hours of reel-to-reel cassette tapes. Remember what those are?
Oh, yeah.
Including the recorder that I was using.
Yeah.
And my mother sent it to me several years ago because she was tired of hauling it all around the country when they moved. And I put a tape on, and by gosh, it still works, and you still hear everything.
Wow.
So my goal is to get all this stuff digitized and record it because it is... quite the archive.
What do you see? What was the biggest challenge, do you think, that they faced in getting someone to the moon?
Oh gosh, there were so many. You know, with developing the launch vehicles, developing the vehicles go down to the surface, developing the capabilities of rendezvousing in space.
And this was early computer days.
Right. And they pushed forward.
I think solid state circuitry because other stuff was like too big, and so it really drove the miniaturization of computers. There were an enormous amount of challenges, and they, you know, overcame every one.
Here we are now talking about the 50th anniversary. At the same time, NASA's got their own problems, a big shakeup at NASA. Talk about poor timing, right, with the spotlight on NASA with the Apollo thing. You've got the space agency scrambling to meet the mandate that the president has put forward for the moon, but now it keeps going back and forth. Are we going to be going to the moon, or now will Mars be the mission?
Well, I think you know, for NASA, Mars has been the ultimate mission for some time, and so that's kind of just bringing it back into that fold. And the idea is that you go to the moon first to demonstrate certain technologies, et cetera. But it still begs the question of, to go to Mars to do what? And so you know, when I ask people, what do you think the ultimate destiny of humanity in space is? You know, they say, well, it's to live everywhere in the solar system and beyond. And, you know, if we're talking like hundreds of years from now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is that if that was our goal, to see what it takes to achieve that, then I think we would have better directionality in what we do today, you know, because then we could ask the question for each step, is this advancing our ultimate goals? But when it's just, do we plant a, you know, if the goal is just to plant a flag, then, well, then you don't do a lot of stuff that advances any goal of expanding humanity beyond the Earth. And I think that's a reasonable goal to have, is to expand humanity beyond the Earth.
And how about resources?
Well,
the resources in space that we could be tapping into.
Yeah, and there's a lot out there, you know, so we think, from meteorite studies, ground-based studies, and spacecraft studies of asteroids and comets and the moon and Mars, you know, there's a lot of things out there that we could use. But there's also a lot of things that we need to learn about us, because it's one thing to say, oh, we'll go put a colony on Mars, you know, like Elon Musk says.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine, but if Earth life does not thrive in less than a one-gravity environment, then maybe the moon and Mars isn't in our future, but artificial structures like O'Neill colonies or something might be. And so it's important to understand what our limits are in order we could be moving in the right direction to achieve these ultimate goals of expanding humanity beyond the Earth.
We still have not overcome the issue of how we're going to get a human to Mars.
It's $1 trillion.
Yeah.
that's the estimate.
But what that would do, that prolonged space travel to a human being.
Yeah. Certainly there's that issue. Of course, if we're sending something with some artificial gravity that is a rotating, you know, vehicle or something, then that would mitigate that. But then we have to figure out how to make those things. And, you know, and how massive would it be? And so how much more fuel would it take? And then that drives up the cost. We basically have the technology to do all these things. You know, it's just a matter of spending the money to build the things that are large enough to accomplish the goals. So, but again, towards what end? If you're going to spend $1 trillion to plant a flag, okay, is that really, you know, worth it? And if you, again, want to go where Elon Musk has identified, like put 1 million people on Mars, it's like, okay, that's reasonable, but can they survive? I mean, can they survive? Can they actually reproduce, and can they have can you actually establish a settlement, you know, beyond the Earth and have it be thriving?
Which country will be the next to go to the moon and plant a flag? How soon is that going to happen? China?
A country other than the Earth, I'd say China is probably the one that's planning to do it.
Right.
And the nice thing about China is that they can kind of start from scratch. You know, they don't have commitments to certain kinds of launch vehicles built by certain people. You know, they they can look at what we've done, figure out what's good, what doesn't work so well, and proceed. When I was testifying last month on the Hill, there was concerns brought up about China and overtaking us and this and that. But I don't see them as a threat. we shouldn't be leaders by looking behind us to see where our competition is coming from and which direction they're moving. You know, we need to have our own goals and strive, you know, as best we can to achieve them. And I think that we can do very well at that.
All right. Mark Sykes from the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, psi.edu, is the website for more information. Good to see you, Mark.
Great to see you, Bill.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Mark Sykes and Bob Dio, our fine engineer producer, on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Back with you tomorrow at 12:04. We'll be speaking with one of the three Democratic hopefuls for mayor. Regina Romero will be with us, also speaking with the Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. Believe it or not, school in Arizona will be opening up in a couple of weeks, just a matter of days. I know, in late July? Hard to believe. Have a great afternoon.